The new film Pearl Harbor kicks off the summer movie season. It's filled with action, romance, young stars, and lots of special effects. Film critic Henry Sheehan has a review.
It's easy just to laugh at Pearl Harbor, a $135 million white elephant of a movie. At 3 hours, it's a veritable parade of absurdity, a travesty of a World War II romantic adventure enacted by an historically awful cast. Watching and listening, it's easy to imagine that screenwriter Randall Wallace awoke from a deep sleep and scribbled down dreamy memories of movies from the 1940s, shards of dialogue and bits of action that taken together make no sense at all. Director Michael Bay, who got his start making beer commercials, then translated these phantom cliches into hokey, overinflated images that don't depict emotion so much as try and sell it. But the Jerry Bruckheimer-produced Pearl Harbor is actually worse than that, for its ballyhooed recreation of the attack inadvertently exposes the movie's soullessness. The attack is the centerpiece of a movie which is just as calculated to earn Oscars as it is to sell tickets. But unlike the opening sequence of Saving Private Ryan, this depiction of combat doesn't want to be too much of a downer. Although director Bay, at the end of the 35-minute sequence, does eventually get around to showing groups of sailors clinging vainly to listing decks, he spends most of his time showing stuff blow up good. He punctuates the attack with two visual flourishes. The first is simply a case of machine worship. Using computer technology, he's able to follow a bomb in a single shot as it's released from a Japanese plane, falls through the air, penetrates the deck of the USS Arizona, and lodges in its arms magazine and explodes. Bay then cuts to a shot of the huge battleship blowing up, a tremendous spectacle. Bay finally ends the sequence with rescuers vainly trying to cut open an overturned ship and rescue sailors trapped inside its flooded compartments. But they fail, and all we see of the trapped men are a pair of hands flailing hopelessly through the incomplete escape route. The lovingly detailed attack turns out to be more thrilling and exciting and real than the deaths of so many thousands, which is largely represented in the mere abstract. Not that the movie succeeds when it does try to hang some flesh and blood on these silhouettes. The egregiously terrible Ben Affleck and the merely talentless Josh Hartnett play a couple of boyhood friends from the South who sign up with the Army Air Corps in the late 1930s. After they've spent 2 whole years in the service, a period which includes extensive flight training, they are finally given a physical exam during which they meet a pretty nurse played by Kate Beckinsale, an English actress who has been pleasantly effective in light comedies, but who is miserably cloying here. Affleck's character, Rafe, falls for Beckinsale's Evelyn right away. But the skies and war beckon, and Rafe signs up with a mythical American division of the RAF, one of the movie's many historical boo-boos. Here he tells his old buddy Danny just why he's going.
Well, Doolittle assigned me. He wanted me to get some real combat training in. Well, guess what? It's not training over there, it's war. Where the losers die and there aren't any winners, just guys who turn into broken down wrecks like my father.
Yeah, I understand that, Danny, but I feel like I got a duty to go.
Don't preach to me about duty, damn it. I wear the same uniform you do. Now, if trouble wants me, I'm ready for it. But why go looking for it?
God, Danny, come on. I'm gonna be 25. I might as well be an old man. They're gonna have me being a flight instructor. I don't want to teach loops and barrel rolls. I want to be a combat fighter.
If you were to construct an anthology of bad writing and acting, right down to ludicrous accents, you couldn't do better than this snippet. As witnessed by the flyboy's strangely scheduled medical exam, the filmmakers can't even be bothered to keep logical track of time and place. Almost until everyone gets to Hawaii, you never know quite where anyone is or why they're there. The most awe-inspiringly stupid example of this tendency comes when Rafe boards a train in New York City that's apparently bound for England. At least that's where we see him next. If you cheat on the little stuff, the big stuff will also lack credibility. So, of course, the cataclysmic attack, where in reality thousands died and tens of thousands were wounded, doesn't really amount to anything more troubling than a video game sequence. How could the filmmakers possibly deal with a tragedy so massive? Only by cutting it down to the size of empty spectacle.
Henry Sheehan is film critic for the Orange County Register.